Did you say you were going to lead, Lee? Okay. All right. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Community Engagement Subcommittee. Let's start with introductions. My name is Derek Mapp. I'm one of the co-chairs of this subcommittee, and I'll just toss it over to Lee.
Hi, this is Lee, council member.
Great. Edwin?
Edwin Barrio, council member.
Laura?
Laura Thomas, council member.
TJ?
TJ Lee Miyagi, council member.
Great. Stephen?
Steven Spano, the HCAP staff attorney at the AIDS Legal Referral Panel.
Let's see there. Beth.
Beth Neary, DPH HIV Health Services.
Kat.
Yeah, council staff.
Yay. Kira.
Kira, council staff.
Thomas.
My
Would you like to?
favorite color is blue. What's the question?
Just introduce yourself.
Thomas Noble, government co-chair, they, them.
TMI.
Right. And Mark.
And Mark Molnar, council
And
staff.
Mark.
I heard it
And
too, Mark.
oh, geez. All right, wonderful. Let's start with the approval of the draft agenda. I hope everyone has had a chance to look at it. You bring that up? This is the draft agenda for today. Does anyone want to add any item, or is it good for anyone? Not seeing anything. I'll take that as a approval from us all. Can we bring up the last minutes? Last month's minutes. Hope everyone has had a chance to look at that. Any changes to the last month's minutes? Oh, Thomas left. Is that a bad thing?
He'll probably be back.
Yes. So, not seeing anyone looking for changes, we'll set that as approval. And I see that Laura's joined us. I'm sorry if I missed you earlier. Laura, would you like to check in? Just announce yourself.
Me?
Yes.
You already got me.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
No worries.
I'm
You're on
sorry.
top of it.
She deserves double billing.
All right. Are there any announcements?
Yes,
Go
actually. I
ahead.
think Mark already knows. I have to fly home for a family thing at the end of this month, probably right after the planning council, the full council meeting, at which time I'll be giving my annual report. And I'm not likely going to be back until probably at least the second week of April. So I will not, there's some chance I might be able to make the meeting, but I'm going to have to ask for some grace with regard to the HCAP report and not presenting that until May. And I'm happy to combine the reports for that month. I just have some family obligations. Thank you.
Thanks, Stephen. And of course, grace to you. Hope everything goes well with your family concern.
Thank you.
All right, thanks. Anyone else? Any other announcements?
Yes, I have two announcements. One, I just regrettably have to leave at 4, so sorry about that today. And two, much more positively, and I think Bill forwarded an email or sent an email that Mark forwarded already, so you probably already know this, but there had been a formula change, not in the formula itself for Part A, but in the data used for the formula of where people with HIV are living using their current address instead of where they were diagnosed. And that just, we do such a great job of prevention and diagnosing people that that change wasn't great for us in San Francisco to the tune of like $560,000-ish a year would it, for 5 years. Much advocacy happened in the state, no small amount of it from Laura Thomas on this call. Probably the majority of it. So very grateful. But the state added that into our Part B award, which is a very elegant way to do that. So we're very happy and grateful for that. And thank you. And thank you all. Probably a lot of other people have advocated that too. So thank you.
Thank
Thanks
you.
a lot, Beth and Laura, for that great advocacy, wonderful public comments or announcements. Are there any public comments?
Can I
Really don't have
actually
public.
just add a little bit in terms of an announcement?
Yes.
Just a quick update on the local budget situation. So folks may be aware that the Department of Public Health had to cut $17 million out of community-based organizations, and a number of the cuts were to HIV contracts, all on the CHEP prevention side, but it included clinical assistant training programs at SFAF and at Lyon Martin, technical assistance and capacity building, support for the Black African American Health Access Point, and also for trans support across all of the health access points, along with cuts to a number of other places, Harm Reduction Training Institute, and some of Alliance Health Project's training programs that primarily go to HIV organizations. As of the Health Commission meeting on Monday, thanks in large part to many folks involved in the clinical assistant program who spoke up about how transformative their experience had been and what they were able to do now that they have finished that program. The cut to the clinical assistant program was taken off the table by the Department of Public Health, and that program won't be touched. All of the other HIV specific cuts are continuing. And so that includes SFAF's support for Rafiki's, Umoja, HAP, the Black African American Health Access Point, and SFCHC's trans technical assistance and capacity building across the full system of care. And in addition, there's going to be another set of cuts at the Department of Public Health, of which 20 million is going to come out of community-based organizations. So the mayor's office gave the Department of Public Health a set of instructions, which are very concerning, particularly around harm reduction services, and portray a number of misunderstandings about what harm reduction programs do and harm reduction services. And I think one of the things that's getting lost in it is the extent to which harm reduction is HIV prevention, services and are reaching people at risk of HIV. So, the HIV AIDS Provider Network and the HIV Advocacy Network are going to continue to keep a close eye on all of this. The Department of Public Health has said that there will be a number of different community meetings, town halls, opportunities for input. It was great that they heard from the clinical assistance program alums and people who are currently in it. I think it's clear that explaining to them what the impact is on community and on individuals and on programs is really helpful. So we will be organizing folks to show up at every possible opportunity to push back on these cuts. We know that there are also cuts through the Mayor's Office of Housing and Community Development and HSH, Homelessness and Supportive Housing. And DAS, Disability and Aging Services. So there are cuts across a lot of agencies that people with HIV and people at risk of HIV rely on. So we'll keep bringing back information from the advocacy side of things in terms of what people can do and how they can be involved. And thank you, as always, to our partners in the Department of Public Health who are also dealing with this on their side, too. So we know these cuts don't come from the folks that we interact with the most. Yeah, we're all in this together. So that's just a quick update about where things are, and things are continuing to change. But the 17 million is set as of Monday's this past Monday's Health Commission meeting.
Thanks so much, Laura. Wow, that is a lot. I'm certain that you'll keep us updated on how we can
As well as our
participate.
HIV Advocacy Network leadership.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. Welcome, Nick. Hello. All right. I think we are moving over to the HCAP report.
Looks like you
With
have a hand up from Thomas.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah,
Thomas.
no worries. I just wanted to just acknowledge what Laura said, and it was impressive with regards to one, that community came out and kind of spoke and was articulate. I was also pleased to see that the process worked in some ways with regards to listening and making an adjustment after the fact. So, and there are still tough days ahead. So just to like, it's a moment of joy, and at the same time, so the other piece that I wanted to kind of acknowledge is that I've got the client survey information for client that Shelley spoke to at the last meeting around getting community feedback, specifically around our HIV, Hep C, and STI services. So if the more people that we can get to kind of do this QR code, and it's a 5-minute little survey, specifically client-facing individuals, the better. So, and the more information we have, the higher impact we're gonna, and more evidence we'll have with regards to the services and how they work. So, if anybody's willing to take some of these flyers and just let me know, and I'm happy to drop them off. Stop there.
So Thomas, I will say right off the top of the bat, tomorrow at 2 o'clock, I have one of my groups. If you could come by Shanti and drop a bunch of those off, I'll make certain that they're in our meeting space and talk about it a little bit.
That would be great.
Thanks.
What's the address? I feel like Shanti is not in the spot that I used to know it. So
27 Mayton Lane, and we're on the fourth floor.
cool. Definitely make that happen, Derek. Thanks.
Thank you. Any other hands? Okay, quick look. Stephen, with the HCAP report.
Thank you. While I have the mic, I'll just tag on to what Laura said. We also had the DOS Commission hearing. A number of us showed up. If you recall, I, along with when the under the stewardship of John Frockswig at the AIDS Foundation, we together submitted a proposal requesting money on behalf of long-term survivors and older Americans living with HIV. They've declined to extend under this with this budget cycle any money specifically for that target population at this time, but they have invited us to engage in the RFP process and have, given us some direction with regard to that. So we'll be doing it again. We kind of knew it was going to go down like this, and I haven't checked in with John since we got the, a letter from the director, but it's going to be a slow burn, and this is a rough time to be asking for new funding, but I just wanted to update you all because I know we talked about it in this meeting. With that, I'll just move on to the HCAP report. As usual, I'll just highlight a couple of ones that I wanted to share, and then if you all have specific questions about others, or if you'd like me to dive a little bit deeper, I can do that. The first one I'll call your attention to is on page 2 at the very top, 2025-96. I just think this is an interesting thing to bring up because we're still trying, kind of feeling the effects of the pandemic here. This is a situation where the client had a client is a resident at a residential treatment facility, and previously they kind of had a previously they had a visiting policy that was determined by the residents in a particular co-op. And when COVID hit, they, banned visitors entirely for obvious reasons. But then, I was concerned that this might happen, that providers might be a little opportunistic about this, about getting rid of their biggest problems, under the guise that it was a pandemic kind of thing. But here we are now when, kind of coming back, and that policy hasn't been readdressed, and it's affecting the client's psychosocial health. So I am working with the client to try and at least get a handle on what the policy is, and then we'll go from there. The second one, I just want to report a success through dental services. I had a client who was terminated from care for behavioral reasons, kind of. But it was more just like they couldn't agree on a care plan, and the client wouldn't agree to the care plan that was being determined for them. Nonetheless, it turns out, and we go through this with, I think you all know, with dental services in general, there are limitations on what everybody can do. Certain providers won't do oral surgery. Certain providers will only do extractions. Implants aren't covered by Ryan White, but they might be covered by Medi-Cal. But this is a situation where the client's immigration status is going to affect their Medi-Cal coverage come July. They're going to lose their Dentical, and I know that this is coming down the pipeline for a number of folks at the that have received dental services from at least one of these clinics. And I am concerned about that. So, we were able to get the client in to use emergency services. They agreed to see the client for emergency support to get rid of the pain. And it seems like that went well enough that they're willing to potentially move forward with a further in the treatment plan, which would be really, really helpful. And hopefully we can get that done before Dentical shuts off on, I think it's July 1st is when folks are going to get cut off. So I've had a conversation with the provider. And I'm not entirely sure how we're going to address. They don't have a clear understanding of how many patients are going to be affected by the loss of Dentical. But I anticipate it's going to be a big issue for folks, because, as you know, the Ryan White Care program really only covers about $1,500 per patient, which could be one procedure, in some instances. So we're going to keep our eyes out for it, but I anticipate some stuff coming down the pipeline for that. Still a success for this client. On page three, I'll go over to 2025-54. I can't remember whether I spoke about this at the last meeting. But I wanted to raise it in hopes that maybe the government partner or government partners on this call could get eyes on this. The bigger issue. So I'm working with a client who is a resident at a skilled nursing facility. They are taking steps to discharge the patient, but we've kept them there for quite some time now, just through advocacy and trying to mitigate transition trauma. I, of course, am advocating that any discharge only be to a permanent placement with adequate support and an ongoing subsidy. And in this instance, it has to be an ADA accessible unit. So I will support the client, with those requirements to the extent I'm able to. But one thing that is an ongoing issue, and it's difficult because it's so ancillary to the issue that I'm working on. So I actually have a law clerk that's supporting me on this and helping to draft some grievances. But there's apparently, I'll draw an analogy because, new motion is to wheelchairs as, home bridge is to in-home supportive services. They're the only game in town. And it seems like, especially on this at this particular facility, they won't allow any other mechanical, whatever repair maintenance wheelchair people on the premises, because there's some, apparently an exclusive contract with New Motion. I have been in contact with the city attorney's office. I'm trying to get a hold of the contract between New Motion and I believe it's DPH, although I suppose it could also be through HSA or through the HSA. I don't know. And I'm trying to get my hands on it. It's not on any contract list that I've seen, but I really would like to see that. I mean, definitely if it's coming through DPH, there should be a grievance process, right? I mean, you know, there should be all of these things laid out that we can kind of use to advocate. But this is a client who is like regularly, and it's reported. I don't have other clients, you know, but they share that it's there's not a day goes by that they don't see somebody broken down in their electric wheelchair with no one to call and no emergency services to support. So this is a client who was like on Market Street and had to pay another, you know, a person like out of her pocket to help her, you know, push her out of the street. I mean, it's incredibly dangerous. And you know, it seems like there should be a solution to that, or at least a mechanism to you know, obtain some customer support from the provider. So I wanted to raise that. Hopefully we can follow up. Nothing else really of note. There was a, well, I'll report just a small success on the final page, 2025-93, which you know, I think it's a success just getting additional training for frontline staff. This is a situation where a client was calling about a subsidy. They thought that they were on a wait list. It turns out that the term wait list was misused by the provider. And it did cause a lot of distress for the client because they were out there looking for a house, thinking that they had a subsidy that they could rely on. Every time they tried to call to get an update, it was they felt like they were getting the runaround. The fact of the matter is they didn't even actually do a full intake and they hadn't put in any kind of application. They were just checking eligibility on that call. And so, you know, we were able to obtain some additional training. It didn't really, you know, fix this client's issue, unfortunately, and they're, you know, not very happy with the result. But, you know, I raised this because and just to share how important it is that we use clear language, especially when we're working with individuals who are trying to access a basic need, like housing, healthcare, you know, money, things like that. So with that, I will make myself available to elaborate if necessary.
I wouldn't have thought that wait list was a term that meant anything other than wait list, but
I wouldn't either. You know, the I think the housing game is a mysterious one to clients, you know,
it's mysterious to everyone.
I have a quick question, Stephen, and it's in regards to the person in the wheelchair. I'm wondering if there was any reach out to the Department of Aging and Disabilities for support, or even if they, well, they should be eligible under disabilities, but I'm wondering if there might be programming underneath their department that might be of support or help.
Yeah, my strategy for this is to try and learn I don't want to just be making random phone calls to organizations that might be able to help. My strategy for this is to be a little bit more targeted, and that's why I'm trying to get a hold of the contract so that I can see who is ultimately the oversight for this particular provider. My understanding is that even if there was another provider, the SNF would not allow them on the premises. And the reason I've been given for that is because there's some exclusivity for New Motion.
I mean, it sounds like they're getting kickbacks from them or something. Like, that just doesn't.
I mean, I'm not, you know, I don't, you know, I don't know. I don't have all the information yet. That's why I want to get the hold a hold of the contract. Presumably, if it's a government contract, it was done through the RFP process. There should be a grievance process. There should be accommodations. You know, I mean, like there's stuff, you know, the stuff we all have to do when we're working with DPH, right? So, like the presumably they have to do it as well. And I see Beth's hand up, so I don't know. Maybe you have more to add.
Thinking through it, like I don't actually know the answer, but maybe thinking aloud, somebody else will have more pieces. So I mean, it sounds like the person got this as durable medical equipment through their insurance, but I think that sometimes is delegated by if they have not fee for service, but if they have per member per month, I don't know the right word, but like if they have capitated care, I think that actually might be paid for by the health provider. I'm not sure, but I think so. In which case, the health provider, if they don't have the capacity, they would contract with somebody to do that. So, I mean, we can talk offline about some of the specifics of the, but I think I know what agency you're talking about. So I suspect it would be a department contract, though it could be the insurer's if it's not durable medical equipment, it's something the insurer buys themselves,
I
which would just
think
depend on the client's specific insurance. So you'd want to know that piece.
for sure. And my understanding is that the medical equipment provider, which my understanding is it's NewMotion. I can say that because they're not an HIV provider, but my understanding is that they do take Medi-Cal. So presumably Medi-Cal is, and there's, you know, an additional grievance process to support through Medi-Cal. You know, I mean, like we could file grievances using basically every mechanism. Right now, I feel like any grievance process is going to require that we work with the provider first. So I'm going to try to exercise whatever grievance process they have, but I can't even get to that until I know who is the oversight person, you know. So I'm kind of still in the beginning stages of this, which is obnoxious for the client because she's been dealing with this for a year and a half, right? And apparently she's not the only one. I saw your message, Lee. I'm not sure that Manuel would have anything to do with this. I have to assume that this is a provider contract through. I can't imagine that MoCD would have anything to do with it. I have to believe it's either through HSA, DOS, or DPH, maybe both. I don't know.
Any other questions for Stephen? All right. As usual, wonderful report, Stephen. And we will go to our next piece, which is the needs assessment COLA update. And this does require a vote, I understand, and we are at quorum.
Yeah, so I can start with the COLA update, and that actually will be a preview of our draft COLA presentation. So thankfully, we were able to put together a focus group last month, one which Stephen was so graciously present for. And so now I can share the draft COLA presentation. So let me go ahead and do that. All right. And so, our target population was cisgendered women living with or at risk for HIV. All right, and then I've included, I won't go very deep into this, I will just give kind of an overview, but this is some of our background. And I do want to note that there is a limitation that, which is noted there. And that is that it includes a small sample size. So it's important to note that clients may not be representative of the demographics of this target population. So I do want to thank our collaborating partners. And so thank you to Stephen and then Stephen's colleague, Delaney. And like I mentioned, this focus group was held last month and it yielded a total of 9 participants. And those participants were incentivized with a $50 Safeway gift card. And I was the one who facilitated that group. All right, and then this is some overview about the COLAs. So that includes our mission statement as well as the purpose of the COLAs. I won't read this out loud. Right, and I did have participants fill out a service category prioritization sheet. And so this is how those categories ranked. And so they're ranked from the most important to the least important that folks rank them in. So as you can see there, the most important ranked category for folks was primary medical care, followed by mental health care, and then dental care. And then on the opposite of that, you can see that hospice as well as home health care were kind of at the low end of that. All right, in terms of our service category discussion, a lot of participants spoke about primary medical care and the quick turnover of staff, as well as the pharmacy fulfillment system lacking follow-through, which went hand in hand with med adherence. So then that would affect folks not being able to take their meds on time or being able to take them as they're meant to, really. Folks also talked about case management, and so seeing not enough case managers, and then two, also a lot of folks really talked about how the case managers or the people who are serving them are not reflective of who they're serving. So in this case, it was a call out to not seeing case managers that are reflective of the Black slash African American community. There was also an emphasis on better oversight on case management that was needed. Then moving on to transportation, a lot of folks did note that they were noticing the cuts to the funding for transportation and how important it is, because that's how they're able to get to appointments, and so without it, then they're not able to get to those appointments. In terms of our discussion of challenges and barriers to care, we did ask the group how their experience navigating the system of care felt like for them. And a lot of folks talked about the support groups and how there was a lack of support groups that they felt were available to them. This was mostly because these women felt that there were not support groups that were specific for women, so they were really hard to come by. And then the support groups that were in place weren't very welcoming for them. There was also mentioned that groups only ran for a limited time. So, for example, they only ran for 8 weeks, and then after that was it. There was also outings and scheduling obstacles that kind of happened. And so, an example provided was that participants talked about activities like social outings that they had. They wouldn't receive the location to it until the day of, and so it was kind of hard to plan for, especially when they had other things that they needed to juggle. When talking about prevention, a lot of folks talked about how there was a lack of HIV education. Oh, was there something someone wanted to say? No? All right. So there was a lack of HIV education. For example, a couple of diagrams or abbreviations could prove to be confusing for people who don't always understand or maybe are trying to learn about HIV. And so an example used was U equals U. A lot of folks talked about when they first saw that, they didn't really know what it meant until somebody finally explained it to them. They do feel like this particular group expressed that they felt like they only received information about HIV only after becoming infected, but not before. And so some quotes down there include, "Where's the prevention at? Spend some money to make it cool. It's not a death sentence anymore." All right, and then we ended this discussion talking about access to care. So some folks pointed out that there was a lack of support around building different kinds of relationships. In this specific case, folks were talking about romantic relationships. And so kind of acknowledging that clients, although they do have a lot to worry about and they do need access to certain types of services, they're also still human beings. And so they want to feel supported living their lives. Also, having to prioritize childcare, which can become a barrier since activities are not always inclusive to parents. And then some quotes there are, "I'm fighting to get services for myself. I shouldn't have to fight for services they get funded for. You have to be creative and know someone that knows the gray area." And then, "No gap in paycheck, but there sure is a gap in care." And then here's the conclusion. So I did want to point out that this specific target population does face a unique set of challenges, especially when navigating the system of care. And so a lot of participants voiced concerns around the lack of education of HIV, which then is also connected and goes hand in hand with the prevention side as well. And then this gap in education of HIV also contributes to the stigma that still exists, and we heard that echoed from participants. So there was a specific call out for more consistent groups and more available groups for this specific target population. And then funding cuts were also top of mind for a lot of the participants. They noted the concern that this caused, especially when we look at the funding that folks saw for transportation as well as social activities. And so folks really noted that this system works as a whole, and so cutting away from one portion of it really does affect the rest of it. And that was it. So any questions or comments?
I have a comment quickly, if that's all right. I just want to thank Kira for inviting us. That was a really great event. I saw some unfamiliar faces, which is rare when I go to these outreaches, and it resulted in some contact with new clients. And so I really appreciated that. It was a very energetic group and a larger one than I've seen at others of these things. So thank you for that. And then I guess a quick follow-up. I remember, I mean, before I seroconverted, I think the first person I dated who had HIV, I didn't really know anything about it. It was prior to PrEP. And I remember going to the Stop AIDS Foundation, which was over on Sanchez or Church or something. And I sat on this like hideous yellow couch. And basically just someone just sat there and talked to me about HIV and like kind of went through risk, and had a conversation about behaviors. And I don't know, can someone do that at the AIDS Foundation? Is there a provider that has kind of picked up where Stop AIDS was on that with regard to the education component? And I see Thomas about it.
Are you asking Laura specifically? Is there anybody else
I was just
specifically?
asking the group.
I mean,
I wouldn't know where to refer somebody.
this is a lot of what the health access points are intended to do, but for different communities and populations, right? So SFAF, has the contract for the HIV prevention focused on gay, bi, and trans men who have sex with men, although we provide other services. But somebody who comes into Strut, can get an HIV test, can get HIV prevention information. We've got different kinds of support groups and materials. I don't think things are organized quite the way that they were when Stop AIDS was operating. And the different HAPs do things a little bit differently. Like, they have the same goals and sort of outcomes. And Thomas can talk more about what the how some of the other HAPs are organized or the way that they operate.
Yeah, Laura, I appreciate that. And they just all operate differently, and that's with intention, right? So they're for different populations and kind of it's funny, I think of the old Positive Resource Center with or what was the acronym for the young people who were young and acquired HIV. There was can't remember their acronyms, but there were these landing pads for folks that were more specifically, and our numbers just reduced to a level that we didn't, the demand for that was not there, which was a great thing. But obviously, when somebody needs it, they need it. So, and the health access points do meet that need, ideally. It's just they don't have a program per se. Like Stop AIDS used to have the Plus Seminar, which was also something else that kind of helped integrate people who had recently acquired HIV and kind of gave them a peer network at the same time, basic information. So, yeah. So yes and no, Stephen. It's not quite so formal, but there are definitely lots of resources out there for folks and a community that kind of cares for them.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, the Positive Force program at Stop AIDS, when it was absorbed by the AIDS Foundation, was really a great program, and it ended during the pandemic, or it went away because of a pandemic. And it all seems to be very decentralized right now and geared or aimed towards specific populations. But it's intriguing to me that we hear this over and over again every time there's a needs assessment or even a COLA, that clients have are challenged in accessing what kind of services are out there. And we even have that online program guide that we funded that sits at HIV Health Services. And it doesn't seem to be enough to get people to get the information they want. So it continues to dumbfound me that this, in the age of the internet, people can just go online and find information, that they still are challenged in getting local resource information.
Thanks, Lee. TJ, I see your hand up.
So yeah, I mean, I was the program manager at Positive Force for a few years, and so I've been in initial talks with Jonathan Salinas, a representative from Gilead, about them funding a general sort of plus seminar again, an African American one, and a mono speaking Spanish one, and so. Because we see the need for it, and people are asking us about it, and we get asked about it at AHAN as well. So.
I will add, one of the things that I think about, Lee, when I hear you speak about this, I keep on thinking about the ways in which community absorbs information, and when I say community, I mean the collective, individuals within the collective, and it makes me think that even though there was a period where, it was hot to put everything on the internet and people will access it, this sort of thing, I really do get a sense that things like the Plus Seminar, where people were collected together and in relationship to each other, really made a big difference in how folks absorbed and then disseminated information to the greater community. And it really makes me think about maybe the approaches aren't exactly what it would be hoped to be. And I seem to remember as well that in consideration of adult learning processes, one of the big things has always been not a, it's never just a singular intervention or a singular point in time, but it's things that are absorbed through a diverse set of approaches or mediums of approaches, and it is something that happens over time in terms of how people absorb information and really really get a hold of the information collectively. I think Beth, you had your hand up, and Thomas, just do you have your hand up for another comment or okay? So Beth, and then Thomas.
Yeah, so we are actually going to do a printed version of the HIV resource guide soon, probably in about June.
Oh.
Same guide that's online, just different printed format. And that's partly because when we've done it before, the case managers do want copies. Like a pretty high proportion of our clients are in case management, so like it's a good resource. It's a good physical reminder. There's lots of different services available. That doesn't really speak to the prevention side as much that some of the comments were, and but it is a problem for ours. And I think that primary care programs do a lot of the referrals as well, certainly for food services or any of the social determinants of health that they might be talking about in medical visits. But we probably have to think more about other ways to connect it if somebody doesn't have medical case management or primary care with us.
Thanks, Beth. So a couple thoughts. One, Steve and I remember that couch, so just to put that out there. And then the kind of the brown wood paneling in the room, it just some ways I wish I hope it's still preserved with that mid-century vibe. The just the, for the Plus seminar, two thoughts. One is the Plus seminar, just to kind of acknowledge that we're around 140 new HIV cases in the city each year. So if you take that, maybe about 50% of the folks might want a social component and 50% might not. So it's not a solution for everybody. And then you diversify that 70 remaining by men who have sex with men, trans folks, race and ethnicity, monolingual Spanish speaking. It would be hard to create a critical density needed to do something quarterly. And then I'm like thinking if somebody misses, if you do it annually, somebody may be beyond that need by the time the seminar actually comes up. So just there's a numbers component to that with it's not as if we abandoned the idea, but it was again, we were not diagnosing thousands of people with HIV each year. So and that is actually kind of leads me back to Kira. And I appreciated the COLA from the standpoint I've had questions specifically towards cisgendered women and living with HIV and what that experience is like. And I kind of noticed almost an absence of the, in a good way, of the frustration of being a minority within a minority, like people living with HIV and then being a cisgendered woman, and then maybe a woman of color. And that experience can be very frustrating. And so I didn't pick up that vibe from any of the conversations that you had. And so that's helpful for me as a somebody who is looking at programming and making sure needs are met from that standpoint. So thank you for doing the COLA, and thank you for the information. And I just wanted to let you know that it actually impacts my ability to do my work and serve the community.
Lee? Lee, I think you're on mute still, Lee.
Sorry about that. Thank you. I just want to piggyback back on Beth's announcement about the resource guide. I think it'd be worthwhile for this committee to further talk about how to distribute the guide in a way that reaches the best, the most, where the most impact will be. So I'm just going to throw that out to Beth so we can add that to our agenda for maybe the next month or so.
Enough for me if you guys are willing to help with that. Thank you. Yeah, we don't. I don't think we made that part of the plan yet. I'm not working closely on that project, but I doubt we've gotten that far. We usually just like email all the people we have contracts with and say, "Do you want some? How many?" And
Yeah,
you could do a broader idea. Yeah.
great. Thanks.
excellent. I have a quick question as well to you guys, Kira, and that is, given the small group for the cisgender women, was there an idea of perhaps doing a follow-up to see if we could extend the reach a little bit and get a little bit closer to demographic equity?
Can I jump in,
I'm
Kira?
just
Actually, that's
I'm
one thing.
making up a bunch of words at that point. I am so sorry, but just the idea of expanding the the data points on the piece.
If I can
And
jump in,
Mark, you were going to
Kira,
say?
on this one. Yeah, this is a focus group. So it is by its very nature small. If you want a more expanded version, I would suggest choosing this population as a target for the larger scale needs assessment. That's already been chosen for this year. And you can certainly be flexible as far as like how broad you want to do. But we do one large needs assessment and two to four smaller ones. And so that's why the conversation in particular was was rich because of the smaller group. So we wouldn't want to actually have a bigger one because we've already chosen the bigger one.
Any other statements or questions? Or not seeing anything. So We are at our next point, which is
Oh,
to.
I still have one more thing under this portion,
There you
which we
go.
actually do have to vote on. And that is just that we have a new suggested COLA target, which is people living with HIV 45 years and younger. And so we currently, I do want to note that we currently do have a COLA target that has already been
Oh,
voted on.
I think it was a little bit different than that. I think,
Oh, okay.
from what I recall, Bill mentioning to me, and I thought it was a great suggestion because this group does get lost. It was actually the like a finite group, so up to the age of the NEET assessment, so like up to 55, so like something more like 40 to 55, if that makes
Oh,
sense.
okay.
Yeah, or it could be loose around it. Someone's 39, that's fine too. Yeah. Sorry, I might have been too clear with you, Kira, when I passed on Bill's.
So, people
Good.
living with HIV for between the ages of 40 to 55.
Yeah.
And then our
And
current COLA target that has already been voted on is people who inject drugs. But of course, like Mark mentioned, we can do a couple of COLAs typically per year because they are a smaller focus group.
Thomas, did I see your hand up?
I was gonna recall that I thought we had a clear conversation around people who use drugs, specifically kind of trying to focus on the how the landscape has changed with regards to various policies. So I just was gonna evoke that forward, but it was already evoked. So thank you, Derek.
Can
The
Mark,
vote
can
is.
you?
Go ahead, Laura.
Oh, I guess I was just going to ask if Mark could say a little bit more about why that age band,
Sure.
what was the
Yeah,
reasoning behind that?
I can't say a lot more because this was something that Bill just mentioned during a meeting with the co-chairs. But it was the idea that there might be a different experience that might be being lost in our various needs assessments for this particular group. There's been focus groups for sure for youth. There have been focus groups, multiple needs assessments for people who are seniors, but we could not recall one that was actually with this particular group of, I don't know, we call this middle-aged folks, a middle-aged focus group. And I think Bill thought of this group simply because there hasn't been a focus group with this particular target population. I don't recall if he came up with any other rationale other than we don't want to miss this group's needs as well.
Okay.
So just for further clarification, there has been data around seniors who are drug using.
I
Two
don't think
separate
that's a
things. I also
population
got
that's ever
confused
been
about that.
done.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Laura.
I mean, like, most of the populations, most of the target populations don't aren't age specific. Like we've done youth, we've done older folks, but people in this like 40 to 55 would certainly be included in all of our other ones. I think I would want to hear more about why. So what would be specific to that age range that would be different enough from other people's experiences that we would be able to use that to guide program development or priority setting.
Oh, Beth. Oh, shoot. I was just going to ask Beth to invite. I can invite Bill myself, maybe to the next community engagement meeting, because it certainly would be impossible for me to give a response to that, since I don't think that an extensive rationale was given to me. But I'm sure Bill has thoughts behind that. I think Thomas, you were in the meeting as well when that was meant. Maybe you weren't actually. I don't think you were in that one. So what I could do, because I can't answer those questions, I'd just be like coming up with stuff. What I could do, unless other people in this meeting feels like, oh no, this area of focus is important because of these reasons, so I don't want to cut anyone off. But if no one comes up with anything, I could certainly invite Bill to come to this meet. It sounds like Stephen might have some ideas, but I could, barring that, I could always ask Bill to come to this meeting to sort of explain further rather than you all taking a vote on this now. Unless, of course, Stephen has some points to make.
Well, I mean, I sit kind of in that group, right? And so I can only share, my experience, but well, that's not true, because I think I have a significant number of clientele that would fall into that category as well. And I think, had we had the needs assessment looked at, if we say 20 years ago, right? If the needs assessments had looked at that population, we may have been able to earlier intervene or kind of see things coming down the pipeline for long-term survivors. I would say one unique thing is that the generation of folks that you're talking about is one of, I would say, the first generation of people living with HIV who were not, where this is a chronic, where it's a chronic, it's it they've only known it as a chronic illness, right? And so some of the challenges that affect long-term survivors who are older or seniors who may have been on public benefits since the 80s don't necessarily affect, right? I mean, we're in the workforce in a way that, other long-term survivors are not. That doesn't mean that the legal issues are gone. It doesn't necessarily mean that the access issues are gone. But it's a different kind of, I think it's a different set of needs. I don't know how worthy of identifying those needs are, and that's what I would love to hear about Bill, from Bill. But I can see, I said this in public comment at the DOS Commission meeting, the next thing coming down the pipeline is this exact, right? It is entirely foreseeable that people my age will be aging with HIV in San Francisco and very well may need to access services in 10, 15, 20 years, right? So I think it makes sense to at least have something on the books to show that, we're still here, right? I mean, it's kind of the same message, but I don't know if that helps, but
I think it
thanks.
helps. No, I think it helps, Stephen. So I appreciate that perspective. Yeah, and I guess hearing from Bill would be really helpful. I'm also just sitting here thinking, though, does this mean we have an opportunity to also, if we have a better idea, from the group, to explore that and put that forward? I don't personally have a better idea with regards to population that I'm curious about and doing a COLA for. But I was just wondering if that question is out there.
I don't know. So it sounds like, oops, go ahead, Mark. Yeah, Mark.
I mean, sure. The COLAs are a revolving door, right? So the next one that we have scheduled is the one that was voted on. This one, if it even occurs, would occur after that. And if the group feels like they want to do this one, you could do another one after that. I might not all occur in 2026, but this is an ongoing thing. You can keep on adding people to populations to the list. So, and of course, if the group feels like no, we don't want to do a COLA with this group, I mean, you could have another one, sort of like just waiting in the wings. The list will just be kept, and we will continue on.
Good
So I guess
transition.
with that said, unless there is a motion to confirm this as a next focus group, because it would have to be voted on, what I'll do is invite Bill to the next meeting of community engagement to discuss this. So I will remain silent for a few moments to see if there's a motion.
I would like I support that, so I don't know if you want a motion for that, but I think it's a
Oh,
great
no, I
idea.
get it. No, there's no need to for a motion for that. I'll just tell Bill
Yeah.
that they were a
Yeah.
bit maybe perplexed by the rationale because there wasn't a rationale, and invite him to attend. I'm sure he could speak to this idea much more eloquently than I, since I don't have any
Yeah, thank
routine.
you, Mark. Like, I'm not opposed to it. I just want to hear more about what we think we might get out of it to make it worth doing as opposed to another population. So, yeah, thank you.
I do feel like the rationale seemed to have been like just because we've never done it before. So there might be a piece of knowledge that we're missing in that experience. And kind of Stephen spoke to that a little bit. I do think about this population from the standpoint of kind of the baby boomer loss. So there's that initial wave of people who passed of HIV, and then that caused a lot of trauma and a significant proportion of a population to just disappear. And that impacted the population, the generation after. And so that's where I'm always kind of conscious of those of us who are kind of following the baby boomers wave, what that will look like. But that's more of a future state than a current state.
The millennials that will be, I guess we kind of skipped over Gen X per usual, but yeah, those millennials aging into that. Yeah.
So just I just want to feel like I'm timekeeping a little bit here. We're a little after four, I want to see if anyone wants to put forth the motion that we can vote on.
Derek looks like no. So I think a next step will be me just talking to Bill and asking him to come to the Community Engagement Committee to talk more about his suggestions directly.
Excellent. So we don't need to vote on it. And wonderful. Wonderful. So the next piece then is the next meeting date, which is April 4th. Am I correct? Oh, April 1st. Sorry. April 1st. Same place, same time.
No
Thank you
doubt.
so much, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks for facilitating, Mr. Mapp.
Derek,
Thank
can
you.
you stay on for just a moment?
I will.
Yeah.
Oh, Kira and Kat.
Oh, Kieran Cap. Sorry.
Yeah.
Never